Margaret Atwood is not known as a science fiction writer, but she's written some chilling fables about the future, most famously The Handmaid's Tale. In her more recent novel, Oryx and Crake, a deadly virus has wiped out nearly all human beings. One of the survivors is Jimmy, otherwise known as Snowman, to a group of genetically engineered creatures who live nearby.
Here they come now. Snowman, oh snowman, they chant in their sing-song way. They never stand too close to him. Is that from respect, as he'd like to think, or because he stinks? He does stink, he knows that well enough. He's rank, he's gamey, he reeks like a walrus, oily, salty, fishy. Opening up their sack, the children chorus, oh snowman, what have we found? They lift out the objects, hold them up as if offering them for sale. A hubcap, a piano key, a chunk of pale green pop bottle smoothed by the ocean, a computer mouse or the busted remains of one with a long, wiry tail. Snowman feels like weeping. What can he tell them? There's no way of explaining to them what these curious items are or were. They stand, they stare. Their beachcombing is an excuse. Mostly they want to look at him because he's so unlike them. Every so often they ask him to take off his sunglasses and put them on again. They want to see whether he has two eyes, really, or three.
Margaret Atwood is that rare literary novelist who's not afraid to dig into scientific minutiae. In fact, she keeps a big brown box in her cellar full of science clippings from newspapers, magazines, and books. It made Steve Paulson wonder about her latest dystopian novel.
You've created a world that has fallen apart. The environment is in ruins and various technologies have run amok. Why did you feel compelled to create this fictional world?
Well, it does seem to be the path we're on. You probably remember that book called The Perfect Storm, in which the perfect storm is created by a number of things coming together. So in Oryx and Crake, a number of things come together. For instance, the human population is supposed to peak at between 9 and 10 billion people by the year 2050. Number two, we're running out of stuff. We've gone through 90% of ocean fish stocks in the past 50 years, just for instance. And number three, we've just opened the biggest toy box in the world, which is the ability to create new life forms.
What about the biotechnology in the book? How close is that to today's science?
It's very close. In fact, some of the things that people think are inventions in the book have already been made. The luminous green rabbit is with us already. A man wanted a glow-in-the-dark rabbit for a magic trick, pull light-up rabbit out of hat. So we've already made that one. We've made the goat spider, which produces silk for bulletproof vests. And we're working on the pigoons.
The pigoons are these creatures in your book that have been genetically engineered so that they have multiple organs and they can be transplanted into human beings.
They're working on pig substances already that would work for us. This is not an anti-science book. It's not saying science bad, not science good. Because science is just a blanket term, such as art or religion. So it's really a case-by-case vote.
Although you seem to be rather dubious about where biotechnology will lead us.
Well, that's just because things get out of control. If you have a situation in which everything is being made for commercial reasons and there's no watchdogs, of course things are going to get out of control.
A lot of novelists get scared off when it comes to science. I mean, they don't really understand it, and it seems too intimidating to write about. That does not seem to be the case with you.
Well, I grew up with scientists. My father was a biologist, and my brother is also one. Therefore, these kinds of books were lying around the house, and those kinds of people came to dinner. And there's a mark of the scientist whereby you can tell a real one from a phony one. They're skeptical. And one of the things they're always skeptical about is other science until they've seen the methods and seen how the results were achieved. So skepticism is just built into the scientific mind. whereas people who haven't been around that are often quite intimidated by it.
Let's talk about some of the characters in your book. Oryx and Crake opens with a scene of a guy who's known as Snowman. He used to be called Jimmy, who may be the last human being on Earth, as far as we know. How would you describe Jimmy?
Well, I would say Jimmy is a kind of an ordinary sort of fellow. He's, when we first meet him, he's living in a tree wearing a bed sheet. He has a couple of other possessions. He's got a baseball cap. He's got a watch that doesn't work. And he's got a pair of sunglasses with only one lens. And he does seem to be the only, what you might call, human person like us in his own vicinity. He has some neighbors. You just met them in the reading. They look like people, only better. And they've got some built-in advantages, some of which would be a pretty good idea. For instance, they've got built-in sunblock, and that means they don't need clothes and will never have to have a textile industry or any fashion magazines. And they have built-in mosquito repellent, and they're completely vegetarian, so they'll never have to have agriculture because, in fact, they eat leaves. They've had to be modified in the direction of the rabbit in respect to their digestive systems. And they've done away with sexual jealousy because they're no longer intermittently monogamous as we are. They are seasonal, and their seasonality has clear markings. When parts of you turn blue, you're interested. And when parts of you are not blue, you're not interested. So it's very clear. No more, no means yes. So they'll never write the collected works of William Shakespeare. So they are, therefore, quite a lot more peaceful and less hierarchical and less aggressive than we have been as a species.
Now, these creatures you've been describing, who are known as the Crakers, they're sort of like human beings, but they're different. They've been genetically engineered to be this way. And in some ways, what you've just described is a utopian vision. I mean, these are a kind of Homo sapiens, a kind of hominid that is designed to have a minimal impact on the Earth.
That too, and they'll never develop, for instance, kings and armies and all of those other kinds of things that we have had. But there's been a trade-off, because people like these could not survive among us. We'd do them in pretty quickly.
Tell me about the guy who has created this new species, this fellow named Crake.
Well, there are two people in the title of the book. One is called Oryx, and that is a female person, and the other one is called Crake, and Crake has entered Jimmy's life when they were both in high school, at a time when they were very keen on playing lots of video games. Somebody asked me, why didn't you have a female narrator for this book? And I said, how many girls have you ever met who would spend hours and hours and hours in a room with two computers playing video games? The answer is actually none. They did a study in England recently on whether or not video games improve your visual capabilities. Turns out they do. But they couldn't find any girls to be in the study. I think they found one. Girls just don't seem to do that. They play relational games, but they don't play games of strategy in this obsessive manner. Mm-hmm. So this is Crake, and he's very good at all of the things that Jimmy isn't very good at.
And Crake goes on to become a scientific genius.
Well, that he does, but we don't like talking about the ends of books.
Now, when they're kids, Jimmy and Crake spend a lot of time surfing around the net, playing various computer games and checking out websites. And you have some ingenious websites. There's one called headsoff.com where people can watch live executions. And there's another where you can...
Well, you know, headsoff.com, there is a lobby in the United States to have this very thing happen. Did you know that?
No.
Open up executions and put them on TV. So far, it hasn't been allowed, but there's groups pushing for it. You know, you'd get quite a high viewership.
I'm sure the ratings would go through the roof, yeah.
At first. It gets a bit monotonous.
Now, there's a virtual computer game that Jimmy and Craig play called Blood and Roses. Tell me how this game works.
Well, this is a game in which you get to play human atrocities off against human achievements. So the blood items are the human atrocities, and the rose items are the human achievements. And there are point systems and bargaining systems. You can actually cause a human atrocity not to happen, but you have to trade one of your human achievements in order to bring that about. You can also use your human atrocities to capture and loot the human achievements. So the winner would be the one with the most human achievements that he has gotten hold of somehow at the end of the game, but quite frequently at the end of the game also there's no people left because the human atrocities have been so widespread.
So, for instance, there's the concentration camp Bergen-Belsen, which is considered more or less the equivalent of the Mona Lisa. Those are sort of have equal
those
standing.
Those are the kinds of equivalents, yeah. You have to know the values of these things in order to play the game properly, so it takes quite a lot of knowledge, which Craig is very good at and Jimmy isn't. Craig likes winning.
Well, it seems to me this game you've created, Blood and Roses, really gets at the underlying question that you're posing in the book. When it comes to human beings, how do we assess what they do
in
the world?
How do we stack up?
Yeah.
Yes, there was a moment in the narrative of the Egyptian life of the dead. Once you died, you went to a place where your heart got weighed. And you can see wall paintings of this. There's little scales in the god of the dead is holding the scales, and on one side is your heart, and on the other side are your actions. And does the goodness of your heart outweigh the badness of your actions? That's always the problem, isn't it?
Margaret Atwood talked with Steve Paulson. Her novel is called Oryx and Crake.